You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to an earlier than anticipated Terra Scottish Football podcast, but then it's not every day you go and fuck up the Spanish that well. So yeah, Scotland 2, Spain 0 last night, absolute class, and I am joined by Tom Watt and Tony Anderson.
Hello.
Hello, hello everyone.
What a time. Yeah, what a time to be alive.
I was just wandering down the street coming back from work, and Duncan just posted, "Anyone want to come on?" I was like, "Why the hell fucking not? Let's talk that all through. No prep for that. I've seen it all. I know everything I want to talk about."
To be fair, there are a few people like Craig Anson. They called it. They said that they thought this could happen. I still, I'm Scottish, so like didn't quite have that. But I thought we were capable of it. I just didn't think it would be in the manner in which it was. Like, we were really fucking good. And, we might have, you might have slight concerns about whether this is the start of Spain on their downward hit, but they were still at a World Cup and still pretty good, and they've still got a lot of very good players. And we fucking battered them about Hampden Park. Brilliant. And I suppose that was the thing that John McGinn said in the aftermath of Saturday's game. We won, but it wasn't good enough. We know we've got levels. We've got further levels we can get to. They fucking showed that. They must be, I bet there's a few of them absolutely dying today, because they put in one hell of a shift. Like, you still have to be an element of luck and still be really, really on it to beat a team like Spain.
I think so. I think while there was always a sneaking suspicion from a few folk, like I certainly wasn't as bold enough to think that we would win the game, and I didn't think we'd get anything from it. But there is always there has been under Steve Clarke a sneaking suspicion that we've got a result in us, and we're a lot harder to beat than we've been before, and we can be up and at. And there was a feeling in some quarters that maybe we could get in about them. That feeling has happened a few times. We've had that feeling a few times, and I think other than the Denmark game, we haven't maybe delivered on that.
Well, we think about the Euros, Tom, the actual finals. I mean, we fell flat on our face.
The Ukraine game, when it was like, look, if we get in about them, then we can do something. I cannot remember Scotland playing a world class team, and regardless of where Spain are on their journey, they've lost one other Euro qualifier in the last, three European qualifications. Scotland have won big games. They've had really big important results. But I cannot remember another game where we absolutely bossed a team in the top 10 in the world, pretty, with the exception of maybe like a 20-minute spell, pretty much from beginning to end. Like, we made them play our game. We dictated the pace that the game was going to be played. We forced them into doing things that they didn't want to do. But the two victories over France, you know, they were really, they were great. Great victories.
It was lucky.
They were smash and grabs.
If we had won this 3-0, I mean, you don't want to be greedy, but if Shanklin's one had gone in at the end, it wouldn't have been the three other best chances of the game were, we hit the bar. Ryan Christie's just going narrowly wide, and Shanklin at the end. I mean,
Dykes
as well. We had more than enough chances that we could have absolutely buried them. And you don't want to get greedy, but it was a complete performance. It was a confident performance. It was a performance of chest puffed out. What are you going to do to deal with this? And Spain couldn't deal with it. And it was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was. To see a Scotland team that execute a game plan quite so expertly, it gives you a lot of joy, because as you're saying, they controlled the emotional side.
It was teetering in the first half.
And then they had, you could see they had trigger points about when they would get involved in the game, when they were willing to stand off them. They understood the assignment clearly on how to beat a team like Spain. When I was doing the pod the other day, the bit where my confidence came from, I was nowhere near to the levels of boldness of Craig Anson, but I said, if there was a team in the top 10 in the world that you would pick to play with Scotland's attributes and the way we play, it was Spain. I did feel like we were the sort of worst of the mid-range teams for Spain to almost play, in the way that we line up and the way that we like the game to unfold in front of us. But they were, and this takes me, and we're going to move back to Scotland very quickly, but this takes me to where I think Spain, so arrogant the way that they've done the two matches. They've turned up and they've tried to turn up and use their whole squad in the opening two games of a qualifier so the manager can get a feel for it.
It was eight changes they made for last
night. You're fucking arse. That's so bad. I'd be furious if it was me and it was another, if I was a fan of a country of that size. Like, who do you think you are? You're turning up to, and why is it chosen that Scotland at Hampden on a nighttime game, the way Scotland have been playing competitively, would be the weaker of the two? It just strikes me as just sheer arrogance.
It's also pretty stupid, I would say, to do.
Yeah.
Like it's naive or arrogant as well, but I think it's also reckless, I would say, in a five team group. Yeah. Like, you know, these games now matter more than that. Like, you know, that you don't have the cushion of that really bad team. Cyprus were still pretty proficient. You know, you've not got that cushion of that really bad team that everyone's going to take 6 points off. Mm. I mean, imagine actually Cyprus, that might be the case. But this is a quarter of the campaign done already, just in two games. It was a high risk. And again, you're right, arrogant strategy from them. And especially at a time when this is not a stellar, like, you know, you when like they won in 2012, yeah, like after they'd won the World Cup and they go into the Euros and they just like kind of dominate the thing, and you're just like, or yeah, even 2010 as well, where you're looking at the players that they don't even make the squad, you're like, oh fuck,
France are like today when you're
this is not this type of Spain squad. The quite naivety is certainly one adjective you could use about that, but it doesn't matter because Scotland can only play against who the manager picks,
and I don't think it would have made too much of a difference. Maybe
no, Gary, I watched them on Saturday night. They were like, and that's when Joel did the same. That's why Joel's article came away from him. Like, actually, like, and it's a continuation of what they did at the World Cup. Like, they are a really good team, and if you're not organized, they will carve through you, like, you know, or they'll slip through you like a knife through butter. But like, Steve Clarke has obviously watched how to play against them previously, and it works with what Scotland can do, and it's so disciplined and happy. You can have all the possession you want in your own half. Absolutely knock that about all the time.
The second it got to the 20 yards, 25 yards out, we would, with the three back three and with the aggressiveness of Poitras,
narrowed completely.
Yeah, and obviously with Callum McGregor sort of, and McTominay coming in, it would just, there, it would be, there was no way out there. And then we just made them get the ball. They would eventually just have to get the ball wide and cross it. That it wasn't cute or neat. We don't have to talk this up like we aren't talking about how we would describe a team in Scotland who would behave that way. It's because they're being outthought, they're being forced wide, and they're now just looping balls into the box with no real thought or process. That's what happened. There's no two ways about it.
But I would like to add on one side of this. I am delighted. I am absolutely overjoyed with every aspect of the Spanish reaction before and after. Like, I mean, obviously, I'm delighted that they were arrogant about it. Even though, you know, the players that came in, you know, they still had four or five players that play for Real Madrid on the pitch at one point or other. You know, they're, the depth of talent that they've got there is mighty. But the manner in which they got bent out of shape, the manner in which they were pointing fingers at each other during the game, Pedro Porro, like the ground, the pressure of the occasion forcing him into like the size of an egg cup before the first goal, just like him buckling for absolutely no reason. Callum McGregor at the end with like a whole bunch of Spanish players just trying to kick him because he kept running past them, building right the way up to like Rodri's sweet tears about the, oh, we threw ourselves to the ground.
Oh,
today.
God.
Oh,
the irony in that was just unbelievable.
I was like, lack of awareness. Oh, please, keep bring it on.
But yeah,
like,
it's
great when you beat Georgia. And the players go, and their players are like, oh, you know, they were a bit physical. They roughed us up a bit. But when it's Spain, you're like, oh, you were played off the pitch.
You were absolutely played
off the pitch. You were running to the ground. You were played off the pitch. We had all the best chances. You were lucky to get away with two. And you're so sorry about it. It's phenomenal. I couldn't wish for it. Like, I'd far rather that than them being like, you know, Scotland were amazing. Much better than we expected. Really magnanimous in defeat. I really like, I want him to keep going with it. I want this to be his like bete noir for
what makes it so acceptable. So, if you wrote how it would all work, this is exactly how it all would have played out, even towards today, even today's aftermath. It just keeps on going.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You want a baddie, right? Mm-hmm. And the only thing better than a baddie before a game, which you like build yourself up to, is a baddie after the game when you've already beaten them.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, we are all aware that big players and big teams are bad losers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's so satisfying to see it properly, like to manifest itself. Yeah, like, you know, like, you're just like, yeah, no, that this the, you are, you have shown yourself to be exactly who we think you are. But what on the Rodri point is really interesting, because he gave an interview to BBC Radio Scotland, kind of straight after the game, where he was pretty complimentary. So something clearly is happening. Like, I don't know if there was a wind up in the tunnel or whatever between him, you know, just you doing the flash interview off the pitch to him going into that cupboard at Hampden where they do the interviews with the TV. And I think today, I think there's been notice that he's kind of retracted. He's step back from what he was saying and stuff like that.
Someone showed him the stats, but none of this adds up, sir.
but it was one of those things where you're like, yeah, this is, and then you're reading like the Spanish tabloids talking about it as being big and physical, and you're like, yeah, like what were you expecting? Like, of course, but like you were like
on a Tuesday night in Glasgow.
It's like be us complaining about Spain passing us to death with 4-0. It's like, oh yeah, like, of course, like yeah, that's what you expect. Like what, like yeah, it's bizarre.
It's the other satisfying thing about it is that if I'm picking any football I want to beat, it's the Spanish style of football. Yes. I fucking hate it. All right. I know I'm wrong. I know people, I know it's good and I've been able to sit and appreciate it, but it ground me down over the
years. Because
it was Barcelona and Spain doing it.
That was fine. It's fine to watch it when it's executed well.
Yeah.
But the problem is that it's become so institutionalized in terms of like, oh, this is how you win. This is how, as opposed to like, you play to your circumstances, like, you know, that you can see what, like, you know, if you're Barcelona, like, why you brought that in, because we have more players that have played together for years, more technical than anyone, so why wouldn't we do this? But then it became like the default, right? This is what you do to have possession for possession's sake. And, you know, you can sit there and be like, oh yeah, well, like, I think this the passing stats are something like, you know, like it was something like they had what, 661 to 219. Doesn't make a blind bit of difference. But also, they were like, what was more impressive? What was like, one of the things we'll get to, I'm sure, but the amount of times Spain passed the ball out the park.
It was like
every time that happened, you were like, oh, this team is rattled. Because we were like, we were just closing down the space. So, right, actually, well, we should probably go like, well, let's go back to kind of go back to the start. Team was announced. It was this three, sometimes five at the back, and then with two potentially four in midfield and Dykes up front. Were we surprised by the selection of McTominay coming in? And obviously, we expect Dykes to start, and Dykes did what Dykes does and just did not disappoint in any way. Like, I'm sure we could probably do about 5 minutes for each player.
I was certain that Christie was going to play. I just thought his attributes matched up too well to this game. And so I thought he was going to play regardless. Dykes there isn't really another option, whether we like it or not. It's difficult. He scored two goals, but I think it maybe showed our intent playing McTominay, because McTominay is a better player than Jack all round, and also is probably very much more adept of playing on the front foot when he's given that license to do it, both at club and at a national level. When you see him getting that opportunity, he always looks a better player than when he's sort of treated like a holding player. So it was one of those that I expected it to be Jack and McGregor purely because I thought they're going to want to just do a lot of protecting of the back three. When you saw McTominay, you're like, he's got other ideas here about he wants his athleticism, so when we win the ball, we can get forward, or when we need to, when we're getting into the wide areas, that someone's going to be getting there quickly to get in front of Dykes. And then once you put it all together, you can see exactly why everyone was picked. You get a game, you're talking about the game plan, the precision of it all, the individuals within it were, you knew that's what they wanted to do when you saw the team, and then it just executed perfectly.
Yes, I would agree with all that. I think given all the substitutions, you could argue Stuart Armstrong was a bit unlucky because he had a pretty good game, but I don't think there was a huge amount of arguments with the way the system was set up. It wasn't what I'd picked, but normally what happens is like I'm out by three or four players. I think I was out by one, and you could see you could see what Steve Clark's trying to do, which is starting to become a recurring theme. When even a year ago, it was like, yeah, we might get result, but I'm not entirely not that he's wrong or that I know anything more than he does. I'll caveat with that, but it's more like, okay, all right, these are the weapons we've got. This is the way that we play. This is how you set it up to, and that's bold. That's bold and that's aggressive. And that was exactly how we started. It wasn't like we tried to put ourselves into the game.
You can see how much he learned from the Euros. I really do think you can see how he got he got lineups wrong in the Euros. Czech Republic game. Like, I don't think there was any doubt. People were doubting it before the game when they saw it. During the game, when people were right. I'm not. It's not normally the case that everyone, the blowhards online and in the pub, are right. But I think everyone did call that they didn't like the lineup and that. It was maybe a bit negative going into that game. And I do think, and the beauty of Clark and the beauty of the team is it always seems to be constantly evolving, even when it takes a hit. So again, like the Ukraine game, even when it takes a hit, it doesn't seem to stop them being confident. They've got so much trust in each other and the ideas that it still continues.
So yeah, I think that's right. So I think that's the most exciting part, I suppose, about Steve Clarke and about what he's building here, is that this is a resilient squad. So defeats, there has been defeats, there's been disappointments, and instead of being knocked back to square one, which is kind of how it often feels a lot with Scotland, that we get a bit of momentum and then we lose a game that we're expected to lose or have a disappointing result against Kazakhstan or whatever, and then it's like, all right, okay, and then it's like, oh, we built ourselves up. Like, whereas this is we're taking incremental steps, and yeah, sometimes we get knocked back a little, but we've got enough momentum that we continue going forward. I've not really explained that very well, but it feels like there's such a, like, we're building on strong foundations the whole time, that we're not falling out like a 10-story window. Like, if you know what I mean? Like, we're just like falling on the ground. Like,
I think it was most stark last night that we have a philosophy and a way of playing that doesn't just suit the players that we've got, but is very, it's an identity, it's an identity that you could buy into, and there's a bit of siege mentality in it as well, but there's an awful lot of like hard running and there are a lot of really, really fucking good footballers in that squad now,
but you'll have to run first to earn it.
And there was one team last night that had a defined strategy that they could clearly understand. I mean, even if Spain had wanted to do something tiki-taka, I don't think that's where they've been trying to do recently. I think the formation's been different, the setup's been different. Even before they went behind, they were trying to switch it diagonally, and there were more long balls. I mean, there were arguably more long balls. I think there were two, but there were more long balls before Scotland scored than I can remember seeing Spain do in their glory years. So there is, it's based on this idea that even a year ago,
it's like they reverted to type almost when they panicked because of how we played. Do you think that's what you're saying?
I think there was a bit of that, but I also think that there was a bit of the system isn't bedded in. The system doesn't suit who they've got. The system's not the philosophy of the nation, the philosophy of that country as a football nation for the last 20 years has been a certain thing. They're trying to change it. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Germany managed to do it 20 years ago and it worked for a bit. Spain, hugely successful in a similar sort of time. It doesn't look like it's immediately. But it will take some time to do it. I think it's more that they were trying to do this. They brought in a whole new bunch of players to do it. Very early on, they go behind, and then it all goes to shit. The basics go out the window. They start spraying passes out for throw. So I think that's the biggest difference. And I think even a year ago, if obviously we hope this does not happen for any reason, he's still the most important player in the squad. But if a year ago John McGinn got injured, we're half the team. Mm-hmm. We're not that anymore. Like, still the most important player by a long way. But there's a squad of 25, 26. There are 40 players who are capable of filling a decent role and coming in, even if it's for three games.
And who'll want to. And who'll want to do that as well. Because
It was like what Duncan said earlier. Like, when you guys are talking about identity and that type of part of the national team now, if you use Porteous as an example, when people are coming in, it doesn't look like it takes them any time at all to settle into how we play. And then that makes you think, wow, you've got like 20 odd players. Because every national break, you barely ever get two teams the same in a row, two national breaks in a row. It never happens.
And the point you're making there, Tony, is look at the amount of guys who have come in and have been embraced. Like, you know, so I'm just thinking, you know, because he came on last night, Lauren Shankland, happened Kevin this, but a couple of camps ago as well, you know, that everyone else is so secure in what they're doing that these guys, that it's very easy to take one or two guys who are playing well domestically or, you know, in their own leagues or whatever, and them to assimilate into the squad, but are shaped or molded by the squad, because because if you don't, you're like, if you turn up at training at Scotland camp and stuff and don't show that propensity to work, Steve Clark's not going to have you, and you're not going to be in another squad. But you want to do that because you've been you're seeing what everyone else is doing.
Like Jacob Brown must be working hard, so hard. It must be.
I think he'll get rewarded. Like that's the thing. Like, there must be he's not pulling his weight, and that's a very pointed thing that Clark is saying to him, that that's why Shanklin's getting on. Because
the fact that Brown's getting called up every time and barely get a run shows that he's obviously fitting in. He's obviously working really hard. Yeah. And like you're saying, because everyone has to earn their place there, and nobody can be knocking the vibe, if you like, out of the lineup, and everyone on the training pitch is having to work really hard to.
Well, I mean, that's I think it's kind of overstated a little bit, but you know, that because every club now and every national team's talking about like having like a no dickheads policy sort of thing. But I think that with a Scotland team, like they are eminently all likable. They're dickheads on the park, and we'll get to that in a second.
We'll get to that right now.
But that's what's. That people want to be a part of it, and remember this, like even just this time last week, the main concern that people were having about this team and about the squad was that there was a lot of players not playing for their domestic team. But because we've got, as we said, because we've got this identity and we've got this, like, it'll be welcome relief, I think, to a lot of players to come to Scotland to play for Scotland now. Which is potentially wasn't the case under previous managers, where it's seen as a bit of a hassle and
a chore,
and a chore and stuff like that. And you know, whereas now you're sitting there being like, "Oh, Germany next summer looks quite nice."
Because Porteous actually said exactly what you're saying. He's like that. Everyone in the squad is a good egg, I think was the actual quote that he used, and that makes you really happy when you hear that, because then you're like, because we're all getting behind this team and we are all excited about them, and loads of them, we all do, like, even like when they play for other teams, they're players that you are fond of. But yeah, I think we'll use that. That's a perfect segue into talking about individuals in the performance. And I mean, I mean, Gunn had fuck all to do, really, which is brilliant, but he done it well. The ones at the shots, you know, when they're skidding up and he gets down on them, he looked confident with that. I never doubted that he was going to be able to do that.
That was why I would always, I didn't have any qualms about putting him in, because he as a goalkeeper, seems more self-assured than Kelly and Clark. I don't think, not that Clark's unassured or anything like that, but he just carries an air of confidence of someone who I am mad up for this. He endeared himself. You know, he did the time wasting last night. He did also that time when the player was hiding the net. That I thought, you know, and he had like all of Hampden imploring him to turn around, because you were just like, oh, this would be exact. This would be such a Scottish moment.
Yeah.
For him to just roll the ball out, you know, spin it away from him, and then and that's the thing. Like, is that what could have been a flashpoint, and maybe in previous squads was, outsiders coming into the squad now that we're playing well. Like, is Steve Clark going to pick you on your
merit? Delighted to be there, Gunn, in both games. Massive grin on his face in the Cyprus game. He looked really keen to be there and to impress. And
I was saying that Granny had come down from Invergordon for it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's lovely stuff.
Yeah.
And then you go into that back three, man, and it's like...
Oh, just unreal. Like, just so...
Jack Henry's been like one of the most, in that last triple header, he was probably like the most impressive player over the three games, and you lose him. And then you've got Porteous coming in for the Ukraine game, obviously getting man of the match and all the plaudits, but it's still not easy.
He's just fucking strolling international football. Not since that goal yet.
I mean, most of us thought he would, but you go with that back three, balance.
Not most of us, some of us.
And then you've got the balance in that back three, because with the pace of Tierney and Porteous, that's like, that just negates all of Hanley's issues, the issues that Hanley has. And then so that means Hanley's able to play like a rock and just be heading away. It helps if you just put a championship striker up against him like Joslu, which is like, I mean, he had him for dinner. I mean, apart from that 20-minute period that you spoke about, which I do kind of blame on Robertson. I think Robertson got us a bit rattled by nearly getting sent off. And I think that set us lost our cool. And that was that when that 15, 20-minute period came. But outside of that, Hanley was just eating them, gobbling them up all the time. And then Porteous and Porteous just blocking everything. And then Tierney just having just everything that you love about him. And then doing it at the level of that, which we all know he can, but just seeing it in a Scotland strip, the defensive work, winning headers, cleaning up behind, sweeping up, and then I'll let someone else talk about it. Yeah. Carvalho. Like, I mean, wow. That's like one of the best fullbacks on the planet, who was fucking shit, by the way, when it came on. Like, really shit. He threw the ball out for a throw in, it went out for a goal kick, and he just threw it to no one. I was like, you're having an absolute disaster.
But you know, they were rattled. Like, they were getting done on stuff, like they were foul throws and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, you know how hard it is to get a foul throw against you at top level football. Like, it's really difficult.
I remember where you were. It was a remember where you were moment when you were at a live game where someone got done for a foul.
In international football, you actually got done for a foul throw. Like, it must have been so fucking obvious. And it was. Like, it was just like,
I'll let someone else do it. That second goal with Tierney, wow.
My favourite thing about it, though, is it's kind of like, it was kind of, there were elements of it that were like delightfully shite.
Yeah, like, that was why I had a tweet to that effect last
like
night.
He basically picks up the ball and is like, I'm going down the line. Okay, bye. Yeah. And he's off. And they're like, oh my God, there is so much space. But the cross into the box is shocking. And then they're like,
there was nothing on. Like,
there
was
that nothing, was like, there was no, the front
nothing. And like, honestly, every element of it made the whole thing better because it's like there was nothing on. It just like we'll sling this in across the 6-yard box as best we can, and the clearance was horrible.
But the finish was great. Like, that is like great. How many times do you see that not going in the net? Like, that's just incredible.
And the example you're talking about, their rattledness was sort of manifesting it in loads of different ways. So, like, you're not on the kicking the ball at the box, always surrounding the ref, getting frustrated by gamesmanship with Scotland players, even though, like, I mean, they do it. I don't think it's rude or even racist to say Spain are probably one of the worst on the planet for the gamesmanship style. I mean, the Real Madrid-Barcelona games are, for some periods, like, they can barely anything's happening because it's only, just that is only happening. And then on the other side, even their decision-making in games, and the Tierney one was a good example with Carvajal. Carvajal should have fouled him, is what he should have done. And I think Carvajal played in a Real Madrid.
But they were just gone. They were just rattled.
And then Christie just running through the middle of the team. Because the reason Christie never hit that shot earlier is because, and I don't blame him, they're obviously not all just going to leave me just to keep running through the centre.
And they did.
And that's why I think it became an awkward shot. I think it's why, because before it, he probably would have opened his body up to like try and curl it, but he doesn't think that's going to happen. He thinks, I'm surely going to have to pass here. But this is going to make it so bad.
They showed an incredible angle of that from behind the goals heading towards the Scotland net, and McTominay bursts an absolute gut, like cutting across field, and just and that's all it does is it just forces the defenders have no idea what's going. Like, if that had been that kind of deserved a goal, just because, but also you're like, no, we can't have that, because if that went in, that's just ridiculous, because all he's done is really run straight. Like, that should not be how you score goals in international football. There should be a bit more guile to it, but maybe not. But yeah, and then I suppose if we're speaking of niggliness, then there are two wing backs are niggles extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. And Hickey is like just phenomenal for a guy who is now made right back. Well, no, he's not made right back zone, because Nathan Patterson is also really good. This is a class.
They're very
situation.
Different. They're very different.
Yeah, it's
and that's
a class
what's really
situation
fun about that.
To be in. But Hickey, even like watching that documentary last week, I mean, he certainly makes up for his lack of personality off the park by the way he plays on the park, because like he's exceptional.
Dull,
but he's just playing.
He plays
he's just so
culture.
Scottish.
Yeah,
he's just
so
like, you know, he's like, you like yeah, you shouldn't be playing like if in a normally like in the normal Scottish team, you'd be like a number 10, but you're not like you're like a right wing back for us. Like
he did turn Spanish for a moment when he volleyed a pass back up in the air. That was the only time he turned Spanish. It was rubbing off on our players there.
The weirdest part of that was that was absolutely nothing. There was no reason to do that. Like, it was just like, you know, like you could see why the Spain were making those bad decisions because they were like getting around. We were like, it was what are you doing there, Aaron? That was nonsense.
Gunn's good with the ball at his feet, and you could tell the way everyone was comfortable with that because we used them loads. We used them loads with loads of pass back. I don't mean in a bad way. Keep ourselves out of trouble, not let anything happen in there. So at the minute, if there was any sort of doubt, just go back to him. Don't worry about it. Just go back to him. And that's that trust again. The minute he's only been in there for 2 minutes and suddenly everyone's got massive trust in him to do that.
I still wouldn't suggest that we make that a regular habit.
I mean, not the style of that one, but the one in general. We were passing back to him a lot. And you're like Hickey rolling back on the pitch, gaze with ship, Porteous, the minute every time he got the chance to, he just won't make sure the referee knows something bad's happened. You'll never not know. He'll do all the.
Well, I mean, Tierney was doing his best to get us a penalty in the first half. He was being thrown around, but he was being very animated towards the referee.
Especially in international football, in European football, it's Scottish. Club teams as well get shafted.
If it wasn't Spain, I suspect we maybe would have been. Also on that, talk about just those moments. John McGinn, like fair play to Austin McPhee, they clearly identified that just sticking pinpoint corners on that keeper was going to make him even more nervous. And that was every time we got a corner, he was like, oh, maybe. But even that didn't anything come off. It was still unsettling them enough.
Like absolutely. The keepers have to make saves. Absolutely. And then, John McGinn was tremendous way that he's been recent months. It was a different performance.
Before we get to midfield, just back to Andy Robertson.
Not even made out of the back five.
I know. So on that, like he... I think Fowler agreed on this last night. We think that's his first completed pass inside a penalty box in a Scotland shirt. Because his crossing and shooting has been suspect at least, but the first time he does it and we go 1-0 up thanks to McTominay, a bit of luck, but we kind of need it to make that happen. But the moment it got niggly was when him and Porro had a bit of a set to, and it would have been a harsh sending off, but I could also see why it would be given. It was one of those things where you're just like, Andy, you didn't need to do that. That was a bit needless, which was strange that kind of one of the most experienced boys on the park was responsible for that, because it totally unsettled us for the next few minutes at least.
It was very good refereeing, I think.
Two good referees.
Yeah, well, yeah.
In the end, yeah.
I think it's the sort of thing that...
To four referees, I'm trying to do a Simpsons joke. I don't even watch it that much. But everyone else does it on podcasts. Twitter, I want to take part.
No, I think it was very good refereeing. It was the right decision. It wasn't, you know, there was nothing violent in it. But he definitely does look at him, see him, definitely does make a movement of his elbow toward. It was asking a question that did not need to be asked at that point or any point. You know, there was no need for that kind of uncertainty at that point. I think actually Porro making such a hash of it and holding his chest when there was contact nowhere near his chest probably did Andrew Robertson a favour, because if anyone had looked at the video, because rather than, you know, just acting like he'd been hit, which he kind of had, he goes down as if he's been like smashed in the face. So, you know, it probably did him a bit of favours. But it definitely had that.
Then we got a hate figure. Yeah.
Not that much longer, because he had an absolute shocker.
He had an absolutely horrendous game right throughout. But that point, considering actually for most of the game when there was a chance to noise up Spain, it massively positively impacted us. And, you know, any chance there was a chance to ruffle Kepa's hair or, like, help somebody off sarcastically, help drag them off the ground when they throw themselves to the floor, that all was, like, nice little psychological battles. That nervousness where it was like, this could have fucked it. Mm. From that point, for about 20 minutes, Spain seemed to not quite click, but they seemed to remember that they were Spain and
took control of the game. There were
a couple of very incisive passes from 30 yards out, the kind of thing that you'd expect. They were slinging balls into the box, but they got three that they got on the end of, you know, one directly at the goalkeeper, one over the bar, and one on the bar, and we kind of needed to settle the nerves again.
Yeah, totally. The midfield again, McTominay, McGregor, and Christie, just Jesus, what a shift! They all working so hard. I mean, the game plan obviously was to try and, you know, have, you know, basically the block had to work at a certain point. Like, you know, that was it, you don't engage to a certain point, and you have to be, and that relies on everyone being really disciplined. There's a lot of times where you're like, well, why is Dykes not pushing up there? I was like, well, because the rest of them aren't ready. Like, that's like, so that, you, but that was usually, and it was about trying to forcing Spain, you've been quite narrow, and then forcing Spain out into the wing and then just pouncing. But that requires so much legs and so much discipline, and also desire to get, once we've stolen possession, to be pushing really, really fast. And all of them were absolutely exceptional. It didn't feel like McGregor was...
There was subtlety to his performance.
Didn't feel like he was on the ball that much. I don't know if he was.
Apparently he hit the 100% on everything, though. Like, he never gave the ball he wanted.
He was like a orchestra conductor. That's how I felt, like, you know, in terms of
only had 25% of the ball, so that was only going to be that so little. So again, there's, like you're saying, there's subtlety to that performance. There's a mindset when he's doing that, and obviously he made quite a few blocks, and he picked up interceptions at the edge of the box, and then he was always getting the ball out wide quicker, whereas McTominay was playing a much more vertical aggressive performance, in the fact that he was charged with getting into the box, really, because, I mean, he'd done it for both the goals.
And multiple other times as well.
And then you had McGinn, who was more of the taking responsibility and doing a bit of ball carrying, because he dribbled quite a lot, McGinn, and unless my eyes were deceiving me, but I feel like he done that a lot, and he won quite a lot of fouls, and he drove
very,
us at the
very park. Different game to how he had to play on Saturday as well, which
Cyprus is playing like a striker, basically. He's like not getting on the ball. He's trying to get into positions to score goals, whereas this one, obviously, he's got to get back, he's got to shuttle in, and then when he gets the ball, we actually need him to take responsibility, be like the John McGinn, where he's using his arse and he's turning and he's driving and he's opening space.
It was a vintage arse performance, I think. There were a couple of where you're like, whoa, this arse can play in the top line. This is an elite level World Cup winners cannot deal with this arse. There weren't any World Cup winners,
and then the Christie, man, fucking hell, he must have been knackered after the game. The amount of tackling and pressing, I watched the highlights when I got home, and there was just a bit he was like trying to press four guys all at once, and he was just shuttle running
and still being able to kind of do it as well.
And you're like, wow, this is ridiculous. And then obviously he always has a bit of quality, and he brought that to the goal. And then and then I suppose you just come to Dykes, and this period, unbelievable.
I think it was at Craig Anderson said on Monday show, like, not a footballer, I just love him. It was, you know, necessity being the mother of invention. Would he have started? I don't know. But he, right from the get go, just Like, again, I think the being disciplined enough, not just chase balls, because it has had the potential to be a frustrating evening. And he's desperate. Every time he plays for us, he's desperate to be in amongst it. Mm. That's why he obviously picked up his obligatory yellow card because he just loves it. Like, he just loves the physicality, and he's just irrepressible. Like, that's the only way I can describe him, in terms of, like, he's one of these people who, I bet he could miss 99 penalties in a row and he'd still want to take the 100.
Yeah.
He's got absolute belief in himself. He would be a world class player if he could really play football.
And you
saw that from, like, the chance at the end of the first half, because two great touches and then he just can't get the decision
to try and, like, dink it with a half volley lob. I'm like, who the fuck do you think you are? Like, why he obviously doesn't want to use his left foot that much that he's thinking, I'm gonna lob the goalie with the outside of my right foot as I'm running at full pelt.
But like, the
classiness you need to execute that is so high.
But everything up to that was incredible. Like, you just anticipate, like, because you saw where he was when Scotland gained possession. It wasn't just halfway line. He was a good 10 yards into our own half. And then there's the ability to anticipate and know where the ball's going. And also,
to give Robertson the option. Really.
Yeah. And fucking love him.
There isn't a player in the squad. Like, there are more talented players, there are more important players for all of those. There isn't a player that typifies Steve Clarke, what Steve Clarke's done well for most of the things he's done well leading up to this, that typifies this Scotland team than Lyndon Dykes. Like, there are better technical footballers, but he's grown into tactical discipline. He must be a fucking nightmare to play against, even if you are the world's best defender who is the best reader of the game. It doesn't matter. Like, there's no, like, you know, to your point about to penalties, there is no sense that he's getting frustrated that he's losing every ball. I'll get the next one. Like, his work rate was incredible. Like, he had as many clearances. He literally had as many clearances last night as Porro playing fullback for Spain. If he could finish a little better, he'd be a £70 million player.
Yeah, but then he wouldn't have been at Livingston. He wouldn't be he wouldn't have played for Merrimack or whatever other team. You know, some of the teams.
And we might have had to sacrifice something else that makes the there might have been a bigger ego. There might have been, mm-hmm. There might be some element that means that it wouldn't work as well as it does for the team. And he works so well for the team that if he misses a couple of chances, so be it.
And then he goes around rattling cages as well, which absolutely. Is just like, just that he is a menace in both, like, in both senses of the word. Like, and it's just absolutely... like,
so many different ways. Like,
whatever you do, don't bite him. Yeah, et cetera. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, it's just a joy to have all these different types of players that we have at the moment who are, as I said, likeable, but also are grafting like you wouldn't believe for this manager, for these fans, for the country at the moment. Like, it's just incredible. I mean, Tony, you were there. Hampden gets an awful lot of stick in terms of atmosphere and stuff like that. But last night, I've came very close to saying that with cliche about it being the 12th man and stuff like that. But, like,
knock yourself out, Duncan. Have a laugh.
But, like, the fans were, I think, especially in comparison, I know it's a different game, different kickoff times, so in comparison to Saturday as well, like, it was night and day, literally. But the fans, I felt, did make a. Played their part, I suppose, in the game.
It was so loud in there. I mean, I was in the posh seats. I was really kind. I got to have a lovely wee time listening to John Collins and Telford having a chat before the game.
Who's got the better hair?
Telford. I had some Ayrshire chicken with chorizo. stew with potatoes. It was lovely. So it was a nice wee time, wee taps. It was a great setup. But then when you go out there, it was really loud. It was a lovely experience. And like when you're waiting for the final whistle to go, that roar when it went was just poof, like blown me away. And I've been to a couple of Scotland games recently. I went to the Israel game and that, and obviously for different reasons, there were different types of games, but they were like show-stopping moments in them, and you could really see the full front of the atmosphere in Hampden. And it does have its issues. I'm not going to pretend it doesn't, but when in that bowl, when things are going Scotland's way and pretty much every single person in there is on one side, it still makes a fucking hell of a racket. And the place was shaking. Power to them. Darn Army, not always my favourite folk, but power to them last night. Eh?
Have we got anything else to say about last night? And I'm just like, you just got that it's June until we play again, and Craig Anderson will be along soon enough with just telling us how remarkably bad our June record is. we're away to Norway. Let's hope that Haaland doesn't fancy it.
I've got the Proclaimers that night in Leaf Links. The night that, know, so,
it's a 5 p.m. kickoff, isn't it, in Norway?
I'm going to try and watch that. Then I'll try and get into them. I'll see if I can all work out. I feel sorry for Admiral Fallow because they're supporting. And sorry, lads, no one's going to be there. Everyone will be watching the Scotland game then. The best thing they could do at Leaf Links is put up a big fucking screen.
I think one last thing for me was on Steve Clark and his post-match interview, where I have seen many Steve Clark interviews. I would go as far as to say all of them, where he downplays what's happened on the pitch, and he, you know, could have just beaten Celtic, whatever it is, you know, like, you know, just one result, got to keep our feet on the ground, move on. And he did that last night. He did exactly the same thing last night. He did exactly the same, you know, just the first two results, all the things you'd expect him to say. We're building something here, a bit of momentum, it's all really good. But he had the biggest grin I have ever seen, which is not that hard, but he was saying all the same things, but you could tell that inside he was like, what just happened there? Just this enormous, enormous grin, barely able to get the words out of like, oh no, we got, let's downplay this, downplay, these are my lines, these are the lines I've parroted out for the last decade just to make sure that we don't get too carried away and all these things. Whereas inside, and you can see behind the eyes, like,
that had extended to the player. The players were quite disciplined on that mess as well. Like, you know, they were not getting, you know, we talked about McGinn after Saturday's game, you know, saying that, you know, we've got more we can give and stuff like that, and they gave it, but they still. And I think we're guilty of it. We're just doing 50 minutes on this, going overboard. And why wouldn't you? Because we've seen some horrors over the years.
This is our privilege as a fan and a podcaster.
Yeah, like, if we can't do it now, then we'll never get that. But you can kind of see them, the clogs kind of ticking, being like, if not us, then who? Sort of thing. And you know, and you okay? France, yeah, that's like, but we don't have to worry about that at the moment. So let's, like, you,
we are capable. I'm going to leave it here. We are capable of, if things go our way and things work, of being a dark horse who gets into the latter stages of a tournament. That team is capable of doing that. Things have to work our way, like Morocco in the World Cup just there, but. And that still doesn't even mean that we're going to make the Euros. I mean, there's still those stumble. But that team, with that attitude, has the ability to do it. There is a world that is not too far from here where that is a team capable of doing that.
That is exactly a great point. Like, that's exactly a great point. it's that you'll... Previously, you know, the whole thing was you would be seeded fourth and be like, and then we'd complain about not qualifying and stuff like that. And you're like, well, what were you expecting? Like, we're fourth seeds. Like, it's just like, it was going to be difficult. This is just feels a much more sustainable, much more I don't know, like work that is worked for. Like it's not like it's not fluke. Like what happened last night wasn't a fluke, actually. Like, you know, it was a result of years of lots of a collective coming together. And you're absolutely right. And so now the idea of Scotland going deep in the tournament doesn't feel like a fantasy. No. Like it does, like, and you know,
doesn't mean it'll happen, but it doesn't mean it's a fantasy. Yeah.
It's not without the realms of possibility, if that makes sense. Like, whereas actually just going to a tournament previously, like even 2016, remember Euro 2016, first time we expanded, we didn't make it, and you watch Northern Ireland and Wales like having the time of their life, and you're sitting there like Charlie Nicholls, you're sitting there thinking, this is never going to be us, like that, like, you know, the sort of thing. And now I'll be hugely disappointed if we don't make Germany, and now we're giving ourselves a platform that this nation that's fucking football mad, but there's only 5 million of us, but we could actually do something, like, and why not, because we fucking deserve it.
Here we go.
Well, I think that's it. Yep. Yeah.
Dinner time for me. I'm hungry. But, thanks very much for having me. I was a late addition, and that was a lovely experience. So thank you.
It was a singles match turned into a triple threat on the week of WrestleMania. It was exactly what a late addition, but elevated it much to a much greater degree. But thank you very much, Tony. We'll let you go and have your tea. And thank you, Tom.
Thanks very much.
We'll see you all later. And more than Scots.
Podcast Network.